This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba is here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our callers, some topics to talk over.
Yes, we're going to talk about when you get those paper cuts and other little annoyances, why they feel so absolutely awful. Are you a wimp? Or what? You know, those minor injuries that hurt so much.
Got it.
And then we're going to talk about lung cancer. Lung cancer doesn't just occur in smokers. There's a percentage, less than 5%, but a percentage of people who get lung cancer not related to tobacco at all. Is it a different cancer? And I don't just mean cell type, but DNA-wise. And should we be treating it differently? And should we be studying it differently? We're going to talk about lung cancer. Number one cancer worldwide, number one cancer in America.
What's our recipe?
Spicy black bean soup. If you love soup, if you like beans, if you love spice, this recipe is for you.
Yeah, yummy. And this one comes from a listener. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And our first caller, Zorba, is a listener in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Good day, gentlemen.
How can we help?
Well, for about the past 15 years, I have had pretty bad dry skin. It is seasonal. It covers the tops of my hands, up my arms, sometimes my shoulders. It'll even make it to my upper chest. And I've tried just about everything. I'm very active. I drink probably a gallon to a gallon and a half of water a day, so I kind of doubt it's dehydration. But I've tried numerous different types of lotions, most of which seem to help for the day. But, you know, once I take a shower and wake up the next morning, it's the same as it was before. I'm just wondering what other... possibly, could I be drinking too much water, and maybe it's some type of like a phosphate imbalance, or could there be other options to clear up the dry skin?
Seasonal meaning you tend to get it in the winter?
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just want to mention something about water, and then we'll go on to the skin. The new research really shows for most people, you drink when you're thirsty. You don't drink when you're not thirsty. That thirst for somebody who's healthy is an incredible key of when you should drink and when you don't drink. 16 glasses of water is a lot of water. It's not going to do anything for your skin at all. You're clearly not dehydrated, but it's not as if your skin is more hydrated when you drink more water. It's that if you are dehydrated, meaning you're getting like 4 glasses of water a day and you're exercising, mm-hmm. that it's going to make a difference. So I just wanted to hit that on the water side. So let's talk about skin. Skin and dryness in the wintertime in many places, it's a desert. It's dry. In the summertime, especially in the upper Midwest, it's humid. It's sort of tropical. So if we look back and we say, what's the problem? The problem often happens to do with the removal of oils from our skin. And that has to do with what we use. So how many times a week do you shower?
I might be a little bit OCD with that. Ever since I was very young, I shower when I wake up. Depending on when I work out, I'll shower after the gym. Mm-hmm. And nobody likes to jump into a bed feeling dirty, so I'll shower before bed.
So that's the issue. You're removing the oil from the skin. I've got some recommendations for you. First of all, it's an issue that people have in America. We shower a lot. In Europe, they shower once or twice a week. Now, do they have a different odor in Europe? Yeah, probably. They probably have an odor. But I have a recommendation. You're drying your skin out way too much. I mean, 3 times a day, a lot of showering. In fact, for most people who have a dry skin, my recommendation is shower every other day or every third day, and that will do it. But number one, let's talk about soap. What sort of soap do you use when you're showering?
Well, I knew even from an early age that like an Ivory bar soap absolutely makes it 5 times worse than anything. So I do go to the pharmacy and get the super hydration moisturizing bars.
And that's what you want to have. You know, Dove actually is a very good cleanser to use. Basis, Cetaphil is one. And talking to the pharmacist actually about it would be a great idea. I would go to showering less often, but I would go to sponge bathing the parts of your body that you may want to keep a little cleaner. So, for instance, when you're coming back from the gym, you're sweating under your arms. Now, showering after the gym, if you have a lot of sweat on you, is it makes a lot of sense. But that's your shower for the day. That's okay. That's what it should be. And then if you want to get, as I said, if you want to clean certain parts of your body, the perineum, the pelvis, for instance, underneath the arms, do that with a washcloth. And instead of using soap, use a soapless cleanser such as Cetaphil, C-E-T-H-A-P-H-I-L, I think is how you pronounce it, or how you spell it, Cetaphil. Or use a little lemon and water. Lemon and water can cut through the grease just like it does in the sink, and it can actually make you feel good. And the other possibility is to use a baby wipe. So you're avoiding water altogether, and they're moisturizing. Yeah. And baby wipes are great. You can buy them. They have a tingling feeling to it. You get an aloe baby wipe, mm-hmm. and you do that. And cut down on your showering, and you know what? You're going to feel much better.
Yeah, the baby wipes make a lot of sense, and maybe that'll prevent me from having to buy all these women's moisturizing creams. It's kind of embarrassing sometimes.
The expensive women's moisturizing creams. That's exactly.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah, there you go. So good luck. Let us know what happens.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call at 1-800-462-7413. Now Zorba, a listener with us in Berea, Kentucky. Hello.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I am calling because I'm dealing with sinus problems and allergies, and I would like to know more about the best treatment options. And so I've been reading about, I know that I have a mold allergy. I feel like I have a lot of symptoms of candida overgrowth, and I've also been reading a lot about just general inflammation. And so I just sort of like to know more about that so I can figure out good treatment options.
Okay, how do the allergies affect you? What happens to you?
Well, it's mostly my sinuses. I have multiple sinus infections a year, and they've been getting more frequent. And I have other digestive problems too, but that's not the overriding thing. It's mostly I'm always dealing with my nose.
Uh-huh. So I want to ask you a couple of things first of all. So what do you take for the allergies, by the way? Any antihistamines at all?
Well, I did go to an allergist, and I was prescribed one of those nasal sprays that has a little bit of cortisone. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're cortisone sprays.
Yeah, okay.
Not a little bit. They actually are cortisone sprays. They're just not absorbed very much into the body, but they're cortisone sprays.
Okay. So there's that, and then just the daily allergy pill. I can't even remember the name of it right now. Something like Zyrtec or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And you're taking that, and you're doing that every day?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about candida. For the most part, the people who are interested in candida are either writing books or making money over cures for candida. And so candida is always the culprit. Every 3 to 5 years, a new book comes out that says, Candida, your cure to a healthy heart. And so I've heard a lot about candida. No replicable and reputable scientific evidence that candida causes us problems. We live with that. It's in our body. Women do get yeast infections, which we treat, and they're often due to antibiotics because they destroy the normal flora of our body, or there's something else going on, such as diabetes.
Right.
So the candida issue is, to me, a non-issue.
Okay.
The mold issue is very interesting because we don't know much about mold. We know most people tolerate it really well. But there are some theories. Why do some people get chronic sinus infections? Are there mold and fungi in their nose and their sinuses that are living there? We live with these molds all the time. And do they bother some people? And there's some provocative data that came out of Mayo about that. But we don't have an answer to that.
Okay.
And a strong antifungal medication is not recommended, and the studies haven't shown that they do very much. So we're always left with, what do we do for our house?
Yeah.
You know, how do we keep our house like that? One of the things you want to make sure is that when you look at your house, you want to make sure the air filter is working on the furnace. You want to make sure it's clean.
Uh-huh.
You want to keep the fan running 24 hours a day because your house is more likely to have a continuous running of air within the house.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sleep, you want to make sure it's Dacron or something that is not goose down, that's around your bedding, that it gets washed on a regular basis. And frankly, I think opening the window in the bedroom makes a big difference in the summer and in the wintertime because you have a continuous replacement of air. I think that makes a difference, too. And then finally, do you have any cats or animals in the house?
Yes, and my allergy testing did show I'm allergic to cats.
And, of course, you've got a cat, and you've had it for how many years?
I have four cats.
Oh. Well, wait a second. Time out. You have four cats in your house, and you wonder about allergies?
Well,
and
you've been tested. That's a piece of it, but it's just getting worse and worse.
So getting back to it, stay away from the Candida cure. Look at environmental things and keep the hair down on the cats as much as you can. Make sure they stay out of your bedroom.
Yeah, we do that now.
Do you shut the door?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you should do. The bedroom ought to be cat-free. Because that's where you spend 6 to 8 hours of your life.
Yeah.
So if you keep the bedroom cat-free, but you know, as soon as you open the door, they'll all want to be on the bed.
Okay.
That's the way I would do it. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Uh-huh.
We appreciate the call. At 1-800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, you raised a really interesting question at the top of the hour. How come these tiny little injuries, paper cuts or maybe stubbing a toe, hurt so much?
Because you're a wimp. That's the reason. Nobody else
hurts that much on that?
Not at all. Yeah. It's very interesting. It has to do with the representation within the brain. That's what it is. So there's something called a homunculus. It's sort of part of the brain that is represented. And you look at the number of neurons in the brain. And if you look at the back, for instance, you know, the back of our body, there are not a lot of neurons that actually feed the back and feed the skin in the back. But if you look at your finger, it has, especially the index finger and the thumb, it has huge representation within the brain. And why? Because we do fine work with our fingers, right? And you want to know where things are in our hands at all the time. So what happens is when you get a paper cut on the finger, it hurts so much because it actually has lots of neurons that are going into your brain, discharging into your brain. Whereas if it happens in your mid-thigh, you could have a gash in your mid-thigh and you look at it and you go, where did I get that black and blue mark? It didn't even bother you, right?
Yes, that's right.
And you go, I must have banged it. And then you remember, yesterday I was doing something in the yard and I banged it. That's because there are not a lot of neurons. There's not a lot of neurological representation of the mid-thigh in your brain. And so it has to do with how much it's represented. The face is tremendously represented. So, you know, you have a little pimple in your face and you notice it right away. And if you're a teenager, of course, you notice a lot right away. So it has to do with that. It's not that you're a wimp. It's not that you're a wuss. It has to do with where the neurons are that are represented. But I know this because people ask me, they'll go, why does this tiny paper cut hurt so much?
Right.
And then you begin to blame it on yourself and begin to think that you're not a tough guy.
Right? But it's not true.
And the women are not tough women. No, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with representation. So the answer is don't get paper cuts, right?
Sure.
Yeah, that's what you do. By the way, do you know what a really good cure is for these little paper cuts in your finger that bother you?
Mm-hmm.
Super glue.
Really?
Put super glue over it, and it seals it up. And sometimes, especially if you're on a camping trip, it'll make it so that you can actually work with it. Because sometimes these little cuts are really bothersome.
Yeah.
Do you ever get a little paper cut?
Well, sure, everybody does.
Yeah.
Good info. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Austin, Texas. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I'm 64 years old, and I've been a cyclist all my life, and alternated that with swimming sometimes when I'm off the bike. Over the last 3 or 4 years, my triglycerides and HDL have gone toward the bad, you know, the glycerides going up and the HDL going down. 6 months ago, I got a 180 on the triglycerides, and my HDL was down to 28. The doc said maybe I should start taking medication. And that was a wake-up call for me to clean up my diet because I figured as much as I exercise, I could eat anything. And, of course, you know, we know that's not true. So I did some drastic diet changes, cut out all of the trans fat and saturated fat and lost a bunch of weight. And then I went and got tested again thinking that I'd see wonderful figures, and they were actually a little bit worse. Any idea? Is it just going to take me longer to get these back in line, or?
Well, a couple of thoughts. First of all, how long was it you were on the diet before you were tested?
Yeah, about 5 months later.
Okay, so it's about 5 or 6 months to see what diet will do, especially triglycerides that are diet-related. You know, there are a couple things. First of all, we care about these numbers because of the constellation of heart disease. In other words, mm-hmm. we want to reduce heart disease. Mm-hmm. So they're not as if these are magic numbers. These are, we always focus on numbers in America to reduce heart disease. Exercise is good to reduce heart disease. Not smoking, of course, is good.
Sure.
You know, being at the right weight, eating plentiful fruits and vegetables and avoiding bad food. We know what bad food is. It's on the whole, generally the fast food that we mostly eat in
sure.
our society
sure.
make a difference. But sometimes these are not reflected in the numbers because of things that we don't understand that are probably inherited traits.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a low HDL, which is a high-density lipoprotein, of mm-hmm. a less than 35 and certainly less than 30 tends to be inherited. So question number one, is there heart disease in your family? Do men or women suffer from heart attacks at a
no.
young age?
No okay. history.
Okay. Do you have longevity in your family, mom's side
yes.
or dad's side?
Yes.
How old?
87, and my mom's still alive at 92.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you've got longevity in the family. So, mm-hmm. so number one off the bat, I'll say longevity in your family is a big plus. Doing mm-hmm. right, exercising right is a big plus. Now, low HDL. We don't have anything really to increase it. Well, we have niacin, but niacin I don't consider to be a good drug, and I don't think, although niacin, if you can tolerate it and take aspirin, may increase the HDL. I don't think there's any credible evidence to show that it actually significantly reduces heart attack rates. In other words, it increases this number, but it's not like the statins where we know it actually makes a difference in heart attack rates. It just increases the numbers. So I've never been a proponent of having people on 1,000, 2,000, or 3,000 milligrams of niacin. I think we're treating numbers, and there's no hard, credible evidence. Now, there's disagreement among cardiologists, and I know I'll get an email.
Mm-hmm.
It says, wait a minute, look at this study and look at that study. But my analysis of the data is that we don't get a lot of benefit unlike a statin. Now, what's your LDL or bad cholesterol? What's that number?
52.
Well, 52 is way low. So what did your doctor want to put you on?
Well, I've been using fish oil and flaxseed
mm-hmm.
and eat a lot of salmon.
Yeah, which is good. Then that's the right stuff to do. So what did your doctor want to do?
No, I don't remember the name of the drug.
Yeah.
I just refuse to use it.
Yeah.
I insist on doing it with diet.
I myself would also refuse to use it. I have to tell you, you've got probably a genetically low HDL, and you've got also a genetically longevity in your family that we can't quantitate. You've got triglycerides. You're taking fish oil, which is the mm-hmm. thing we do for triglycerides. Your numbers aren't great, but your LDL is awesome. Your LDL is low. You exercise.
Yep.
You've lost weight.
And
you've
the
done diet.
Ratio is low too, 199.
Yeah. So you've done dietary control. So I think that's probably as good as you could get. I myself, in this situation, would not take a drug. I think the drug is treating the numbers. So
wonderful.
So good luck.
Wonderful.
Keep up the good
Thank
work.
You.
Keep the weight off.
No question. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
We appreciate that call.
Zorba. Sir, did you hear that? He called me sir.
Well, I always call
you don't,
me sir.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Well, before we break, sir, it's time to put you on the clock for another fast-paced edition of Rapid Fire. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Kim from Ashton, Idaho, has successfully followed your advice when it comes to duct tape and warts. Now she wants to know, how does it work?
How does it work? That is a good question, Kim, and the answer is, we don't know.
Next up, Gary in Illinois wants to know why he sneezes when he gets turned on.
When he gets turned on, it's, you know something? It's a response because there is erectile tissue in the nose.
And while we're in that ballpark, Tony in New York is curious to know if men suffering from ED and a high BP mm-hmm. can take drugs for both without conflicting results.
Well, it depends on the drug. It turns out that certain drugs for high blood pressure, such as beta blockers, can interfere with erectile function. Other drugs do not. It's something that your doctor should look at, and you should use the right drugs so that you can take care of your ED and your blood pressure simultaneously.
Moving along to Susan, whose home just tested at a 5 for long-term radon levels. Should she be concerned?
Well, sometimes there is a concern. Once again, we know that radon can be associated with cancer. There's still controversy back and forth on how much we should treat it, but I think I would talk to your state and find out exactly what level is safe in your area. And if it is of concern, you may have to get the basement fixed.
Brandon in Seattle, Washington wants to know if the growing trend of online pharmacies can be trusted.
Well, the answer is some of those pharmacies are junk pharmacies and some of them are good. If your state has a list of pharmacies they can trust, that's the way to do it. If not, buyer beware.
Finally, Kathleen in Pennsylvania has sweating only in her hairline and neck. What can help with that?
Well, that's a difficult issue. You certainly can't spray Right Guard on your hairline and on your neck. That would be a little strange. But there is a drug called Drysol, D-R-I-S-O-L. It's from your doctor by prescription only. And sometimes a treatment once or twice a week before you go to sleep at night will stop that sweating. Good luck to you.
Well, we've worn out Zorba during this edition of Rapid Fire, but make sure to get your question in for our next round. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have our recipe coming up, lots more calls, our medical myth buster later in the hour. Good reasons to stick around here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 800-462-7413. You'll find a line open now for you if you'd like to call. But before we take our next call, it is recipe time. And for that recipe, I am thrilled to welcome Appleton, Wisconsin listener and chef Christine Calhoun. Christine, hi.
Hi.
Good to have you with us.
Thanks.
Now, this is your spicy black bean soup, which from the title sounds delicious. How'd you come up with it?
Well, actually, I've made different bean soups, and my husband and I like black bean soup, and we like things that are a little spicy.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I don't write things down. I just kind of do it. And my grandniece is a student at UW-Madison, and she asked me for some recipes, so I was going to make this, and I thought, well, maybe I'll type it up, and then I thought maybe it might appeal to your readers, listeners. Sorry.
Actually, public radio people are great readers, and I think a lot of them actually think that they're reading when they're listening to
public
radio.
And they're going
to
read the recipe when they get it.
Absolutely,
and
they get it on our website. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. Start out now, so you get a 16-ounce bag of black beans. This is a labor of love if you're starting with dried black beans,
right,
and that's what you do. So
you could use canned beans. In that case, I would rinse them and drain them and add them at the end.
Well, you know, you bring up a very important point. When you're starting with dried beans, they're different. They're firmer, and they have they're different from canned beans. But the rinsing of the canned beans is critical because otherwise they tend to sort of mush up.
But do the dried taste better?
I think they have a little bit. I think they have a little bit firmer taste. What do you think? Have you ever used canned beans?
Well, not in this recipe. I've used canned beans for like salsas or salads or something like that.
You would have to add the canned beans at the end. I think this is a dried bean recipe.
Okay.
A labor of love. We'll go into that. 1/2 a medium white onion chopped finely. I take it onion is onions, but you like white onions, huh?
Yeah, well, I guess you could use any kind of onion.
So that would be good. Garlic, a clove minced.
Mm-hmm.
So minced a clove of garlic. And now we get to the hot and spicy part. Mm-hmm. 1/2 a jalapeno pepper. So you buy that in the store and take only half of it and put it in.
Depending on how big it is.
Mm-hmm. Usually,
my husband does a grocery shopping because he's retired. So.
Uh-huh.
And actually,
so does that mean retired people do the shopping within
the
family?
They do the shopping and they do the cleaning, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Tom is smiling right now.
They don't always do all those things.
I was thinking that. That's right. Because Tom is in the semi-retired mode and he's got this smile on his face and going, I wondered if Monica is listening because that means I'm going to have to do more. Now, for people who like it really spicy, they could use more jalapeno.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. More jalapeno. What do you do with the seeds? You take the seeds out before you mince them?
I take the seeds out, yeah.
Yeah, that's where a lot of the heat is. And, of course, wash your hands because the capsaicin, which is really the oil, goes underneath. And I've done that before where I've touched my eye and it's awful. I can still remember it like yesterday. Okay, 1 teaspoon of chili powder,
mm-hmm,
commercial chili powder, and 1 tablespoonful of cumin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now we get to the ham hock, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. for some of our people who are vegans or vegetarians or Orthodox Muslim or Jewish, they won't use it.
Right.
But, you know, ham hocks are kind of interesting. They add a nice flavor to it.
They do.
Yeah, nice flavor.
I've made it without the ham hock, and it tastes better to me with a ham
yeah,
hock.
Yeah, I think, too. I mean, I'm an omnivore. I eat everything, so I would use a ham hock. Where do you get your ham hock? It's hard sometimes to get them.
Well, my husband usually shops at Woodman's.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually have them there.
Yeah, I've always wondered what a hock is.
Tom,
do you know what a hock
is? It's on the bone.
Yeah, it's a joint, but I wonder if any joint is a ham hock. I wonder if there are any listeners out there who know what a ham hock is. I just sent out the notes, so we will get hundreds of emails.
So is this ham hock cooked before you put it in here?
Well, it's probably smoked. I think they're smoked a little
bit. They're smoked a little bit, but they have to be cooked. 14-ounce can of salt-free diced tomatoes. Great idea to make it salt-free. We get too much salt in the American diet, and whenever you can buy a salt-free product, go for it. Which is good. 2 cups of chopped carrots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Big carrots, small carrots. What do you use?
Well, I like carrots, I like to put lots mm-hmm. of carrots.
I love
and
carrots.
Stuff.
I love them too.
So you know, if you don't like carrots so much, you don't need to that many.
A cup of chopped celery.
Uh huh. I always buy organic celery.
Organic
too.
Celery, which is good. Parsnip, chopped. I like parsnips. Do you like parsnips?
I do. We just mm-hmm. happened to have a parsnip in the refrigerator mm-hmm. the day I did it, so I stuck it in there.
Yeah, I think parsnips are great. They add a sweetness. I use them in chicken soup. They add a sweetness. They're sweet, mm-hmm. and they add a sweet flavor to the soup.
Are they sweet?
When you eat them?
Do they have sweetness?
I do. Moving on, 2 cups of corn. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. there's always a curmudgeon in the crowd. No matter when you make soup, there's a curmudgeon. 2 cups of corn, and then juice from half a lemon.
This sounds delicious to me.
It actually is. I think it is delicious. It's wonderful. Okay, so I'm going to go over how we make it. So rinse the beans with cold water in a colander. Then in a large Dutch oven, cover the beans with cold water and let them soak overnight. So it's something you may make sort of a labor of love that occurs over several days. Then the next day, drain the beans, rinse them in water, and then in the same pot, cover the bottom of the pan with olive oil, saute the onion, jalapeno, and garlic, mix in the chili powder and the cumin, and then after that's cooked, how long do you saute it for when you're doing that?
Maybe about 5 minutes.
About 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, so about 5 minutes. Then add the ham hock and beans and enough water to cover the beans, about 4 cups. Bring it to a boil and then turn the heat down to a simmer for 1 to 2 hours. And that is the critical part. If it's too high, because I've made beans, I know they burn. You know, so.
Right. And I also don't add any salt when I'm doing this.
I think that's critical. Now, I'll tell you what my mom used to do. You can't do it. She'd put it on an asbestos pad. Do you remember asbestos pads at all?
No.
Oh, she had an asbestos pad, and she'd put it on the burner. She'd put an asbestos pad. I remember chewing on asbestos pads.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember chewing on it. They tasted like cardboard. But we always had an asbestos pad because she made a lot of soup. So you do it for about 1 to 2 hours until the beans are soft. Then let the pot cool, refrigerate it overnight, and the fat will rise to the surface. And I think that's a good point because then you make it into a low-fat.
Right.
Low fat.
Right. I do that with any soup that I make. I usually let it sit overnight.
It tastes much better. All of the spices go together. I mean, I think soup tastes so much better than that. Then the next day, take the fat off the surface, cut the meat from the ham hock if you're going to use it, add the meat to the pot, then add the tomatoes, carrots, celery, parsnip, and the corn. Bring to a boil, turn down, cook for an hour or until the veggies are cooked. And then after the veggies are cooked, add salt to taste, squeeze the lemon juice into the soup. It's a dynamite recipe, you know.
Now, what do you serve this with, Christy?
Well, I forgot to put on there that we usually put like a dollop of non-fat yogurt and low-fat cheese on the top, sort of like you do with chili.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that.
And
wonderful.
We just usually have serve it with some mm-hmm. crusty bread or something.
Some good crusty bread. That's what I love. We have a bread machine. I've got a couple of recipes, and then we have a no-knead bread that's on our website once that we took from the New York Times. Fabulous recipe. I think a good crusty bread would be great. This is a wonderful soup. What a great gift to give, one of your relatives who are going to college. I really appreciate it. We look at it the servings are great, 271 calories per serving and low fat. Dynamite recipe. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. and we enjoy your program.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. So,
thanks.
And for sending us this winning recipe, Christine gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low-Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's really easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org. And if you want a copy of today's recipe, you can visit our website at ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
+1 800 462 7413, our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And now we go to Texarkana, Texas, for our next call. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a rather embarrassing and annoying problem with my nose. Of course, I live in Northeast Texas, and it gets really hot and humid here during the summertime. And when my body temperature goes up and I start sweating, my nose tends to run like a faucet. And it does the same thing when I eat hot or spicy foods, too. And it's kind of embarrassing when you're in a restaurant and you have a runny nose when you're trying to eat.
What have you done so far to try to alleviate it?
Really, I don't know of anything, that I can do except just carry around some extra napkins, paper napkins. You know, when I'm in a restaurant, sometimes I have to excuse myself and go blow my nose and then come back and finish eating.
So. Yeah. How about in bland American restaurants, unlike the hot, spicy Texas food? You know, if you're eating bland American food, does it happen then, too?
Not unless it's hot. Now, hot foods, it does happen. But, of course, you know, most of the foods around here tend to be hot and spicy. Of course, even when I eat at a sushi restaurant, eating the wasabi, even though the food is cool, does tend to run.
Yeah, so clearly this is related to the hot spice, probably the capsaicin, which is really the active ingredient in there. And, you know, you as you say, the food around where you're living is hot and spicy. There's actually a spray that you can use that can be worthwhile. You may or may not want to get it from your doctor. It works relatively quickly. It stops the mucus from happening. It's called Atrovent, A-T-R-O-V, as in Victor, E-N-T. It's used in the lungs, and there are two nasal sprays, Atrovent nasal sprays, and they actually cut down on mucus production for people who have lots of extra mucus. Now, I don't know how quickly they work. This is not an over-the-counter spray, you know, which works instantly. So I don't know if they take 15 minutes to work, 5 minutes to work, or an hour to work. But it may be something that's worthwhile using, because you can say, I'm going to the restaurant, I don't want to blow my nose, and give yourself a couple of sprays and try it and see if that's worked. That's what I would recommend. This is coming from the taste buds and what you're eating in your mouth. So it's not going to do any good to cover your nose when you're eating, because it actually isn't coming through your nose. It's coming through the back of your mouth when you're actually chewing that delicious, hot, spicy food.
Yep.
Tom and I both like hot, spicy food. So it's something that we love to have. So.
Oh, yeah. I can't live without it.
So that's what I would recommend. Try the Atrovent spray. See if that works. The other thing you may want to do if you don't want to try a prescription spray is to get an over-the-counter. There are two things that you may do otherwise. Over-the-counter nasal spray that has salt, a salt nasal spray called Ocean, O-C-E-A-N, just like it sounds, that can be worthwhile. And sometimes a little neti pot before you go to the restaurant will kind of clean out the back of your sinuses and make it rid of the mucus. But I think the Atrovent spray is going to be your answer to this.
Okay, thank you very much.
We appreciate the call. You have to be careful, Zorba, of some of those over-the-counter nasal spray things.
That's right. Yeah.
Years ago, I got hooked on, and it was awful trying to get off of it. So,
yeah, that's a good point. Never, the over-the-counter sprays are okay, but only for a day or two.
Yeah.
You know, day three, you're beginning to stretch it, and you're going to start to have problems with rebound.
Well, let's log into the Zorba Pastor On Your Health inbox now, Zorba, and see if we can help out Dan in St. Louis, Missouri. Dan is writing in on behalf of his wife, who is an aspiring chef. Dan writes, "My wife is in culinary school and hopes to break into the personal chef field. Unfortunately, she's been given an opportunity born out of bad luck. She's been asked to prepare meals for a friend with breast cancer. What specific dietary needs should be considered for chemotherapy patients? High protein, vitamin D, and calcium? We'd like to prepare menus that both fit her needs and please her palate.
I think that's an important thing. And, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, the person who she's going to be chefing for has breast cancer. But if we look at the importance for cancer, there's no special diet that really cancer sufferers should have. The really important thing of the diet is to follow what I would say is really a more Mediterranean diet. So that would really be the optimal diet. So that's plentiful in fruits and vegetables that may include a glass of red wine every day. You sit down with other people when you're having your meal has less animal protein, especially less beef. And I think that's a diet that I would follow. I also would emphasize fish. If she likes fish, you find a fish that she likes. We know fish is really healthy. We know fish has good fats. And so I would have a diet that was more plentiful in fish and accented fish. That's what I would look at.
Mm-hmm. We want to hear from you. Send your lifestyle questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
An interesting topic to talk over coming up, more of your calls too, and our medical myth buster right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 1-800-462-7413. But before our next call, interesting research that you mentioned early in the hour, Zorba, on lung cancer and how smokers' lung cancer might be different than non-smokers' lung cancer?
Well, first of all, not all lung cancer occurs in smokers. Now, we know there's also lung cancer from passive smoke, but if you take away passive smoke and smokers, there still are a fair number of people who get lung cancer, mm-hmm. and we don't know... We don't know why. We don't know exactly what it is. And quite often there's a cell type difference when we look under the microscope. But this particular study looked at DNA alterations in lung tumors. Now, that's really on the horizon, is there's certain DNA markers that we may be able to use that tell us which drugs to use. And basically what they found is that there may be a significant difference in people who are current smokers to people who are non-smokers in terms of the genome, in other words, the genetic makeup of the tumor, not just what it looked like under the microscope, but what the genes were actually like.
So this may lead us to different treatments?
Well, it may lead us to different treatments. It may also lead us to trying to understand why some people get lung cancer who have never smoked. Lung cancer is the number one cancer in the U.S. It's the number one cancer worldwide. And the more we get rid of problems in our environment, the better off we are and reduce lung cancer. This DNA difference may actually help us begin to fingerprint why these people are actually getting it. And it may need to totally different therapy, just like you said.
Well, there are environmental, as you suggest, things that can cause lung cancer. Asbestos, for example?
Right. Well, there's the excoid mesothelioma, right, which is a type of cancer. They're looking at sort of more garden variety type cancers. But the issue is that this DNA difference may lead to a difference in therapy. Now one of the issues that I think that's important in any cancer therapy is you go in there and they say, well, this drug may help you, but it may prolong your life or it may not. Mm-hmm. And these DNA differences may really help the oncologist decide, is this palliative medicine or is this a curative medicine? How much is it going to prolong your life or not prolong your life? And we're only in the infancy for understanding these DNA differences.
How preliminary is the study and how long is it likely
The problem with lung cancer is that we can stage lung cancer to a great extent and say, well, you know, you've got few months or you've got a couple of years for that. But then we're wrong a fair amount of time. And with this DNA fingerprinting, the difference that they discovered between people who smoke and people who do not smoke, that may help decide whether or not you're going to do chemotherapy at all.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's an important issue because one of the things with chemotherapy is what am I going to get from it? What are the benefits? What are the risks? How much am I going to invest into this? And I think this DNA difference that they found between smoking cancer tumors and non-smoking cancer tumors are on the horizon to improve cancer care.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And back to the phones we go, Zorba, with a listener with us now in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I have a question. I'm going to be going to Haiti in a couple of days, and I have a question regards to anything that I should take, given the cholera situation in Haiti. I'm going with a group, and I was just wondering if there's anything that I should take along for ourselves and then also to help the Haitian people.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, good for you. You're going for some relief effort, I'm assuming.
I'm going with my friend Lori, who has a nonprofit called L'Espoir International, which means hope, and her organization does a lot of partnering with the Haitian people, like for medical, dental, and working with the schools and orphanages and that, and self-sufficiency projects.
How wonderful is that? Mm-hmm. It's just, it's wonderful when you can go and be of service for others. And it's interesting. I recently had gone on a trip to Nepal and Tibet, and it wasn't just a trip. It wasn't just a trek. We actually had medical care. We had clinics, five different clinics, served quite a few people in need. And some people look and they go, "Well, it's a drop in the bucket. You can't do anything here." And I think that's a specious argument. It's a false argument. It's really one person at a time. So I want to congratulate you for doing that.
Okay.
I actually do have a suggestion. One of the things when we look at cholera, besides obviously making sure you want to drink water that is, you know, water that is, you know, that's bottled water when you're there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you can do, first of all, you may want to bring something with you to iodize the water just in case. Of course, you can boil water. If you boil water, that'll be safe.
Okay.
But you may want to bring either iodine kit. Polar Pure is the one that I tend to use, P-O-L-A-R. Pure, P-U-R-E, can just be sort of used forever. It's an iodine-type combination to make water potable, drinkable.
Mm-hmm.
Or just go and get some. You know, go to a camping store and get the tablets, and they're, you know, it's a series of tablets that you put in. And I would bring my, from a water point of view, besides, you know, trying to get bottled water, I'd bring my own container anyway, a Nalgene or something else, just in case, you know, the bottled water isn't available, you wonder about it. A couple of other things. If you go to a restaurant, you want to open up the bottle yourself. You don't want them to open up the bottle. And the reason is they may fill up the water from the sink because it's cheaper and close it, and then they'll open it up for you, and it doesn't make that snap. You want to open up the bottle 100% of the time. So if you're going to a restaurant or something else, if they open up the bottle, you say, "Thank you very much. I don't want that bottle." And you have to have a bottle that you open up because then you know the water has been – you know, it's been purified.
Is water the only concern as far as cholera?
Well, no. From a point of view of the water that you're drinking, you want to drink things that are manufactured. But here's something that you want to have. You want to bring oral rehydration salts. Have you ever heard about those, ORS?
I was looking up a recipe, and I know that you can, like, salt and sugar.
Well, it's a combination of potassium, salt, and sugar. They come in packets. You can purchase the packets. If you purchase them wholesale, they're much cheaper.
Okay.
And if you buy them, it's $1.50 a packet. If you buy them wholesale, you can get them for like a dime a packet or 25 cents. That's the most important thing in cholera is rehydration. So that if you get it or you're working with people, get it. It's the oral rehydration salts that have potassium in there. And that's one of the things I would bring. The final thing I'm going to bring is you want to get Cipro from your doctor.
I have Ciproflexin.
Mm-hmm. Ciproflexin is Cipro.
Okay.
You want to get there and you want to bring some Imodium with you too.
Okay. You know. Also, like I was going to bring soap and hand sanitizer?
I'd bring hand sanitizer. I don't know if I'd bother with soap. Hand sanitizer is great.
Okay.
It's cheap. It's inexpensive. You can buy them now in large bottles. You don't need... It's not just when you're washing your hands. It's not just the washing. It's what are you going to wipe it on?
Okay.
You know, and if the towels are dirty, well, your hands are not clean. Mm-hmm. So soapless cleanser is definitely the way to go. You know, they're 99% alcohol. They're good for you. Get some little containers too, so you always have it with you. And throughout the day, you know, you just put a little dab on your hands and your hands are cleaner. Are they totally clean? No. And the other thing I'd probably bring is a nail brush.
Okay.
And the reason is when you do have soap and you're washing your hands wherever you are, if you bring a bar of soap, you want to clean under the nails because that's where bacteria live. But I want to congratulate you on doing service, working with a friend in an NGO. There's so much that we can do to help other people, and that's it's not a vacation to Haiti. It's service that you're doing to Haiti, and that's really neat.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate that. And Zorba, time now for our medical myth buster. Mm-hmm. We have a listener myth today about bubble baths. It comes to us from a listener named Kim. Kim asks, is it true that taking bubble baths can cause urinary tract infections, especially in women?
Absolutely is the case. And I don't think it's proven for guys, and especially in young girls. You know, bubble baths are usually a thing you do as a kid. I mean, I haven't had a bubble bath in years. The bubbles in the bubble bath can be an irritation. And the reason is it's the soap that's causing the bubbles, and it's not it's drying soap that will tend to do it. Bubble bath will do it, and any kind of a deodorant soap, Lifebuoy, Zest, Irish Spring, drying soaps, even Dial, can cause urinary tract infections. That's the present theory. So if you're getting urinary tract infections and you're taking bubble baths, stop doing it because that's what's doing it. So it is not a myth. It is a fact that bubble baths can cause urinary tract infections.
So are we recommending against doing bubble baths?
No, not unless you get urinary tract infections. I mean, most people can be in a bubble bath and it's just fine. You've got all those bubbles around and it makes you feel good. Now, I have a question. When was the last time you took a bubble bath?
I don't ever remember taking a bubble
bath. Oh, I took bubble baths as a kid all the time.
I think they only happen in movies so that when that's you show them. The person in the bathtub, the body parts are covered up. That's the only time that you ever have.
Actually, that is true. The body parts are always covered up in movies, and you wonder whether or not they're going to suddenly magically appear, but they never do.
No, they don't.
They're always covered by bubbles.
Well, if you have a myth that's about to bubble over, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. And here's a listener now, Zorba in Springfield, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Fine, what's up?
Well, I've got quite a conundrum for you. All of my life I've been bothered by this pressure in my elbows when I sneeze, and the closest I can get to describing it is when you were a kid and you'd spin your arms around too fast and you'd get that pressure numbness in your hands. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
A good example is I'll be driving in my car and I'll sneeze and I have to start folding my arms up afterwards to try and get, it almost feels like, you know, they're falling asleep.
It's
been going on all my life, and every doctor I've ever said it to says, you know, you're nuts. You're crazy. You're making this up. So I just thought, you know, I could call you guys, see what you think.
Tell us anything, and you know what? What happens in public radio stays in public radio. That's what we say.
So what do you think?
Well, I've got to ask more questions. You know, when a doctor doesn't know exactly what a problem
is.
You keep on asking questions. Not only hoping to get to a question that may help you, but hoping to get to an answer that'll sound reliable and intelligent.
Right.
So, you know, give me some time.
Yeah.
So are your hands on the wheel when you're in the car and this is happening when you're sneezing, or do you take your hands off the wheel? See?
They are on the wheel when I actually sneeze, but I actually had a glimmer of hope yesterday at the hospital talking to a nurse about it, and she said, "Do we check your blood pressure?" And I said, "Sure." And my blood pressure, it turned out, was actually quite low.
While you were sneezing or not?
No, not while I was sneezing, just while I was sitting there. Mm-hmm. And she said, "Maybe when you're sneezing, that has something to do with it." But she was baffled, too. And
yeah, really I don't think so. I don't know if your pressure goes up when you sneeze. I mean, your blood pressure goes up. But you do close your eyes when you sneeze, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what may be happening. When you sneeze, you may be doing something with your arms that's actually giving you that sensation, consciously or subconsciously. I mean, I think it's a muscular thing. You have a sneeze and all of a sudden you're holding your hand. I don't think it's a blood pressure issue. So I have a recommendation, and my recommendation, not when you're driving, but that you go to a yoga instructor and that you learn how to do some yoga activities with your elbows. I'm serious. I'm not being facetious about this. And when you sneeze, then you, as you know you're going to sneeze, you begin to engage in that yogic activity and see if that is the opposite and doesn't produce it. Because what you're doing is then you're trying to work to relax your arm versus stressing your arm. Because I think it's stressful. I think there's something that you're doing where you're stressing the muscles in your elbow. I don't think it's blood pressure.
Any answer is good enough for me, I'll tell you what, because my whole life, every time I've mentioned it to somebody, they just say, you're crazy, and then, you know, keep going on.
I don't think you're crazy. Crazy is usually, there are other things like delusions and hallucinations.
But I'm
serious about that. I would look towards, so that when you start to have a sneeze, you start to actually concentrate on relaxing your arm and see if that's the antidote to this. Don't do it when you're driving, though, because then you'll crash into a tree because you're taking your arm off the wheel.
Yeah, that was just an example, though. You know, if I'm on the phone or something and I sneeze, too, I get it.
But no, I would try this and see what happens. And you know what? You have to call us back and let us know.
Yeah. Well, I hope you guys had a fun time talking to me. I mean, it was a stumper for most of the people I mentioned it to.
Yeah, you see, given some time, and Tom and I can always come up with answers,
you
right,
can,
Tom?
You can. I never have any answers. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
And before we leave for the week, Zorba, let's go to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox for another round of Stump the Doc. Today's contestant is Holly from Glen Arbor, Michigan. Holly writes, my entire day is spent with TV, jingles, songs, repetitive sounds stuck in my head, depending on the rhythm of what I'm doing at that time. Now, my 6-year-old son seems to be having similar issues with rhythmic tapping or noise making that are distracting his teacher and classmates. I'm wondering if he's externalizing what I've been internalizing most of my life, and if so, is there something that can be done about this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly know what you're talking about because periodically this happens to me.
I do it almost all the time. Yeah, I've got stuff going on.
Stuff going on inside your head. And, you know, the answer for this actually is meditation. Now, you're not going to teach your 5-year-old meditation, although 5-year-olds can learn relaxation techniques. But the antidote to this is meditation such as Zen meditation or yogic meditation or breathing meditation. And it's a matter of calming your thoughts so that they're not as intrusive. Now, the thoughts will still be there, but you don't attend to them. And the best explanation I have is you walk out on a noisy street and you're talking to somebody and you're listening to them and you're not listening to the sound on the street.
No. Yeah.
So we can learn how to move that sound and not have it distract us. You can learn that through breathing Zen or mindfulness meditation.
Right.
They don't have the...
Yeah. The most irritating is when you have some awful jingle or
that's something going on in your head
and you just can't get rid of it.
Yeah, well, that's sometimes I have cigarette jingles in my head and I haven't heard them since I'm a child, but I have the Winston commercial and the Marlboro commercial inside my head. Thank you very much for bringing that up, Tom.
That's all right.
I'll think about it all day.
Yeah, what is it that tastes good as whatever
that's
it
right.
is?
That's right. That's exactly it. Winston tastes good like a Bang Bang cigarette should. It's in your brain, too.
If you need us to get some lifestyle problem unstuck or you think you can stump Public Radio's favorite family doc? Send your questions in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Shrek and Donkey, better known as Brad Goldberg and Adam Friedrich, make up our animated production team on the other side of the glass. Adam Friedrich also serves as our executive producer. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba
Pastor, Donkey? That's what I want to know.
I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1112Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.